Okay, questions before we start. Yes.
So for making a text as knowledge base emptied, do we have to prove each and every clause in that?
What do you mean?
If I want to entail a fact in a knowledge base, then do I have to make use of each and every clause of that?
No.
To make it
no.
Empty?
No. No. Not at all. Not at all. Not at all. I mean, no. To prove that something can't happen, right, or that something does happen, all you need is a single proof. Okay, so it doesn't have. See, something. All I need is that there exists at least one proof within this knowledge base. So, for example, suppose you have a knowledge base which has A implies B, A is true. C implies B, C is true. J implies K, L implies M, L is true, J is true. This is your knowledge base. Okay? All I want to prove is B. Now B is actually provable two different ways in this case. All I care is there exists at least one proof, that's all. Okay? And in any proof of B, obviously this either this or this will take part in it. None of these will take part in it. Okay? Other questions? Okay, so I wanted to go over this slide once more just so that everybody, because this is sort of the critical piece of understanding the semantics of Bayes networks. If you remember, we basically said the local semantics of Bayes networks are that given all its parents, a node is independent of all its non-descendants. Non-descendants include its ancestors as well as any node which is not a descendant of it. Okay, so for example, in this case, you know, all ancestors of X will be obviously parents of U1, etc. Also Z, these two nodes, these are neither ancestors nor descendants. So they are also non-descendants. Okay, so that's why X is independent of everything above this blanket, given just these guys. That's the understanding, okay? And it makes a lot of sense, causally speaking, because in essence, what we are saying is something more or less to the effect that if A implies B and B implies C, then you are more or less saying C is independent of everything above B, given B. Once I know B, then I don't need to know what else was above it, okay? Now, one interesting thing, of course, is in a deterministic logic, right, you potentially, if you have A implies B and B implies C, then you don't have to talk about whether A separately causes C. But in a probabilistic sense, you can actually say that A causes C both through B and through a different direction. So in fact, if you don't have that line, essentially that actually means that given B, the influence of A on C is nil. So once you have the parent, then you don't need to care about ancestors as well as other non-descendants. Okay. So that's the main conditional independence assertion that holds in a that's basically enforced by a graphical model. And what that would then mean is, for example, John calls would be independent of burglary and earthquake and Mary calls given alarm. Do you understand what I'm saying? John calls would be independent of burglary, earthquake as well as Mary calls given alarm. Okay? Yes.
It's still dependent on alarm, right?
What? Yes, given alarm.
Given
alarm means given the observation about the status of alarm. Is alarm true or false? If I tell you what happened to the alarm, then I don't need to tell you anything about burglary, earthquake, and Mary calls. It's all with respect to evidence. Okay, so if I didn't tell you anything, that's no evidence. And what I'm talking about is, if I gave you evidence about alarm, then John calls is independent of all other guys at that point of time. Okay, Now we could use this in essence in computing all the entries of the joint probability distribution table. Okay, that was the point we were talking about last time. And there are two aspects to it. First part is just a straightforward application of the chain rule. I thought I'd change this slide from last time so that you know this, the two parts become clearer. Okay, so this is just a straightforward application of the chain rule. Chain rule essentially can take, you know, if you have, you know, J and M and A and not B and not E, so I will write this in terms of not B and not E and A and J and M. That's still the same, right? A and B and C is the same as B and C and A. Okay? And then I apply the chain rule, which basically goes saying P of not B times P of not E given not B times P of A given not E and not B times P of J given A not E not B. And so the evidence is mounting. Okay? And P of M given A and not B and not E and J. Now, if you know these probabilities for any random distribution, this write-up, this has nothing to do with this picture at all. This is true for any random variables, any set of variables. Okay? Now, to get this exactly correct, you need numbers for all of these. However, yes. What do you mean? I didn't understand.
Yeah. You know how the evidence mounts? It mounts in a certain order.
No, any order would be working. So you can decide. So what I did, the only thing I did was chain rule can be applied for any permutation of the variables. Any permutation, because there's nothing to do with the permutation. Okay. I wrote the order such that it corresponds to the topological order, because I'm going to then simplify these. Okay. But I didn't cheat anything here. I mean, this was true. You know, given A and B and C, I can write them in any order I want because it's an AND. Okay? So now I have to look up these numbers. If I had the full probability, you know, for any, if I have the joint probabilities on all types of, if I have the all possible types of conditional probabilities, you could have answered this. But we don't. However, we can actually get by with knowing this network. I know that P of not B is fine. P of not E given not B is the same as not E, because earthquake is independent of burglary given nothing. Okay, so earthquake and burglary are independent. Okay, so this becomes P of not E. And then this, A alarm given burglary and earthquake, just comes down as alarm given burglary and earthquake. This one, John calling given alarm, burglary and earthquake, just becomes alarm, because of the local conditional independence assertion that we already agreed on. Okay? And then this, the most interesting one, Mary calls given alarm, John calls burglary and earthquake, becomes just alarm, because Mary calls is independent of all these guys given its parent. So this is the main thing that we did here. Okay? I mean, you know, you understand the step now. Now obviously all of these numbers are available on the CPTs. So you multiply them. Okay, so that's how you went from local semantics, which is a node is independent of non-descendants given its parents, to global semantics, which is knowing the exact joint probability distribution that is enforced by this network with its CPTs. Okay, so the network has two parts. One is the topology of the network, and given the topology itself, the conditional independences are already known. And the next part is the actual CPTs, actual conditional probability tables. Okay? Given both of them, you have uniquely specified a joint distribution. Okay? Yes?
Would it make sense to say probability of earthquake given alarm?
What do you mean make sense? You can ask anything, but all I did was I played this trick of writing this J and M and A and not B and not E in this order, so that if I write the chain rule, I would get this expression. And if I write it in that topological order, I would essentially be able to use the local semantic. Okay? You can write it in the other way, it's just that number is not available. Okay? You can compute it though, given that you now have the joint distribution. Okay, and then we talked about DSEP, and that's an important thing too. Basically, you know, you can compute any set of conditional independence assertions, whether or not it's an independent assertion, by looking at, so I can, given any set X and any set Y and any evidence set Z, I can tell you whether X is independent of Y given Z, okay, or not, given my Bayes network. And the idea is that essentially for the X set and the Y set, and the, you know, this is the E set instead of Z set, this is the evidence set, evidence variables, I want to make sure that every path from the X variables to Y variables is blocked. If it is blocked, then they are independent given E. Okay? The way they can get blocked is if in fact this is a, what's called a causal path. That means X essentially causes Z, which essentially causes Y. This is called a causal path. Causal paths are blocked if you give a node, if one of the nodes on the causal path is the evidence. Right? That's exactly what we did when we wrote A gives B gives C. Okay? If I give B, then C is blocked from A. So A no longer has any influence. So that's the causal path blockage. This one is Z winds up causing both X and Y. That's called the common cause path. Okay? So that's sort of like alarm causes John as well as Mary. Okay? In that case, if I give you alarm, John is independent of Mary. Right? So the path ultimately, in, you know, when it touches the evidence node, either it is a causal path or it is a common cause path, in which case you're fine. Okay? But if you have a common effect path, which is burglary and earthquake both cause alarm to go off, if it is a common effect path, then you better not have the effect or any of its descendants in the evidence. Do you understand what I'm saying? So, because if I actually give you A, if A is part of the evidence, or A, some descendant of A, W is part of the evidence, then B and E are no longer independent because the path is now no longer blocked. Okay, so it's a, this is the trickiest, interesting part, which is, so the causal paths are blocked if some node on the causal path is in the evidence. Common effect path is blocked if, common cause path is blocked if the common cause is on the, is in the evidence. Common effect path is not blocked, is blocked as long as either the effect or its descendants, neither the effect nor its descendants are on, are in the evidence. So that's why this stuff must be in evidence. None of these guys better be in evidence. And so the arrow directions make a lot of sense. It's not just some random arrows. If you think like this, this is causal chain. This is common cause. Z is causing both X and Y. This is common effect. Both X and Y indirectly are causing Z. So those are actually the names. I probably should write them down, but those are the names to think about. Common cause, causal path, common cause, common effect. And the common effect better not be in the evidence. And somebody on each causal path, on each common cause path, be on the evidence, in which case you are independent. And using that idea, B obviously is independent of M given A, because there's only one path from B to A, M, and that goes through A. Okay, and it is a causal chain path. And if I remember, so it's like this path. And since alarm is given, that path is blocked. Okay, how about, is John and Mary independent of earthquake given alarm? I can ask that question. So is John and Mary independent of earthquake given alarm? The idea is, so John and Mary is now the X and earthquake is the Y. So essentially, there are paths from here like this or here like this. But both paths are stopped because they are part of the causal chain and alarm is present in the evidence. Okay, is burglary independent of earthquake? Given nothing. Yeah. Okay, because there is given nothing, essentially the paths that go from burglary to earthquake, if I gave you alarm, then they wouldn't have been independent, because that's a common effect and you gave it. Otherwise, they are in fact independent. Okay, and then whereas is burglary independent of earthquake given alarm, that would be this path. It's a common effect path, and DCEP tells you they are not independent. Okay, and similarly, is burglary independent of earthquake given Mary calls? That too is this path. Instead of Z, it's so basically your evidence is here, but that should not be part of the evidence.
I don't see what's wrong with it being part of the evidence.
Because if so, the idea is that this is the issue of common effect. Ultimately, what happens when you have a common effect is you have competing explanations as to why the effect happened. Okay, so if alarm goes off, and I tell you alarm goes off, okay, then, and if I already told you burglary occurred, then you don't need earthquake to occur. Okay, or you may want earthquake to occur more, depending on, in this particular case what happens is both burglary and earthquake impact on alarm. Once I tell you alarm went off and I also told you burglary occurred, then earthquake doesn't have to occur as much. So essentially the probability of earthquake changes. It doesn't have to, it's not a question of whether it increases or reduces. If it changes, given that I told you alarm as well as burglary, then obviously these two are dependent. Okay? And the same thing, you know, even if I give you Mary calls, because if Mary calls, one reason she would have called ultimately is because alarm went off. And so that sort of weakly connects those two. Okay? This is, you know, we do this in plausible reasoning. This is explaining away. This is explaining away. In the middle of the night, you hear a noise. So obviously, burglars are out there burgling your house. So you wake up, okay? And then you find actually that a little, the tumbler that you had put next to your bedroom stand has fallen down. Then you say, yeah, it's just a tumbler, and you go back to sleep. Now, why did you do that? In fact, probably the tumbler fell down as well as burglar came at the same time. We assume that since one explanation, one perfectly good explanation is there for the noise, we get to go to sleep. That's what you do. Okay, that's exactly what we are saying. Come, you know, you explain away certain ideas, saying, oh, there is a different explanation that caused this. So then I don't need this to happen as much. Okay, in general, common effects, that's the most interesting pattern that happens. In fact, there are two, the you know, in a if you are thinking of, let's say, so if you think of this as A implies B, C implies B, right, two logical sentences, logic would only allow you to derive B given A is true or given C is true. That's the only direction that logic works, in the causal direction, deterministic logic. Okay, in a plausible reasoning, not only do you increase your belief in B, or you change your belief in B knowing something about A, which is the causal direction, you also change your belief in A given B, which is the diagnostic direction. Furthermore, if I give you B as well as A, you change your belief in C, because you don't need both A and C to occur for B to occur. If B occurred and I also know A occurred, then I am not as interested in C occurring. Okay? So I think that's the diagnostic and the explaining away are very much part of plausible reasoning. And it just falls out of the, you know, probabilistic distribution. Okay? Yes? Yeah, but see, in the case of deterministic path, yeah, but I mean, the problem with the deterministic path is if alarm went off, you don't know either A or C, unless you also know that only A and C can. So if I just wrote A implies B, C implies B, and B happened, I don't know anything about A and C. Yes, yes. I mean, I'm not talking about whether or not A and C are related. All I'm saying is logically, if B happened, I can't derive A. I can't derive C either. Because in logic, essentially, either it's true or it's not true. I mean, either it's true or it's unknown. Okay? And you can't prove it to be true because it's possible that not only A or B, but also there's a huge other number of things. You know, D1 can cause B, D2 can also cause B, D3 can also cause B, and there's so many other things. And you never told me that only these guys can cause B. The way you can say that in logic is, for example, A implies B, C implies B, and you have to say if B is true, then it is true that A or C must be holding. You have to write this. If you write this, then you can do that. That essentially is a sort of a closed world assumption. You are saying nothing else can cause B. A or C must have happened. Then, and if I then tell you, by the way, C did not happen, and A did, and B did happen, then you can prove that A happened in that case. Okay? Yes?
If A causes B and B causes A and there are no nodes between them.
Causality doesn't, what does it, so in terms of, so what do you mean? A causes, so A causes B, then?
And B causes A.
So as a logical, so here is a very interesting issue. Although I act as if implication is causation, implication is not causation. Okay? In fact, A implies B is really nothing but not A or B. Okay, there is no actual causation. And so one interesting question is that Bayes networks actually do more than just talk about the implications. They talk about the causal direction of the implications. What actually causes what to happen? Okay? If you do not take into account the causation, you will have all these nice, beautiful things like the guy who went onto the plane, presumably pre-2001, September 11th, with a bomb in his suitcase because he was told that the probability of having two bombs in any airline is negligibly small. Right? The probability of having two bombs in an airline is negligibly small, and since he was a good guy, he wasn't going to blow the plane up, so he took one bomb with him so that then he will get the good case of not having, you know. And in fact, what's interesting is, you know, same thing happens when, suppose you have a suitcase and it has two locks, okay? And if you open both locks, the suitcase opens. Okay, now if you write it as a logical invariant, which says suitcase is open implies both locks are open. Okay, then you start trying to use logic to do resolution. And if you ask, I opened one of the locks, what should happen? You would like to say that, well, if the other lock is open, the suitcase will open. Okay, instead, logic can tell you that the other lock closes, just to keep the world consistent. Do you understand what I'm saying? So differentiate between causal chains. Causality cannot be circular. Implications can be. You can have A implies B, B implies A, which essentially means A is the same as B. Okay, but causality cannot be circular. Okay, even those cases when you think there is a feedback loop, it's not circular causality. It is value of a variable at time instant t affects the value of the next variable at time instant t plus epsilon, which then affects this at t plus epsilon, and so on. Okay. So my basic point is you cannot have circularity. That's the reason why this is the same question that you asked last class too, I think, which is can you have, I mean somebody asked here, why can't you have circular topology? Because causation is not circular. And Bayes networks really are capturing, in the way we are saying it, they're actually trying to capture the causality. Okay? Okay, so I finally came to today's class. And I asked a bunch of questions on the blog, and only one person tried to answer. Let me try to go through them. I thought I wrote this, but apparently this lamp has reached the end of its usable life. We know this now. Okay. So the first question is, you've been given the topology of a Bayes network but haven't yet gotten the conditional probability tables. Your friend shows up and says he has a joint distribution all ready for you. You don't quite trust your friend. Is there any way you can call her bluff when she gives the entire joint distribution and says this is correct for your Bayes network? Okay. Before you come understand this, you have to understand the following question. If I have just the topology, how many different joint distributions can I give over 5 variables? If I didn't have the topology, how many different distributions can I give? First, think about, there is no topology. I just have 5 variables. Okay? How many different joint distributions are there on 5 variables? Joint distribution, different joint distribution, not the number of entries in the joint distribution, but essentially there needs to be 32 numbers that add up to 1. 32 numbers between 0 and 1 that must add up to 1. How many possible ways can you pick 32 numbers that can add up to 1? Infinite number. So if you give 5 variables, the number of joint distributions on them are infinite. If I give you 5 variables and give you the topology for the Bayes network that holds for those variables, how many joint distributions are there? Say it. Infinite. Still infinite. You should be worried. What did I achieve? Right? It used to be infinity before. It's still infinity now. Okay? I mean, have I reduced anything? Have I kind of removed some joint distributions? I mean, the whole point, remember, what is the point of knowledge? Point of knowledge is to filter out the worlds that cannot be possible. Right? Remember, we thought about this in the logic. When I give you an extra sentence, you say, oh, that means the world I live in cannot be this, this, and this. As you learn more and more, it constrains you. As I said, knowledge is not liberating in a way. You know, guys who don't know anything about the world can say anything causes anything. And so they'll have a lot more richer set of beliefs, you know, such as Rao caused earthquake because he did this just now. Okay. But the more you know about the way the world works, the fewer worlds are actually possible. Okay. So I gave you knowledge now. I gave you the topology between the variables. So what exactly have I reduced? I still have infinite number of joint distributions. One of the interesting things, of course, is that infinities can be of varying sizes. All I need to show you is that there are joint distributions that were possible before that are not possible now. Do you understand what I'm saying? How many odd numbers are there? Infinite. How many natural numbers are there? Infinite. Does that give up hope? No, really. Right? I mean, so there are still natural numbers that are not odd numbers. Okay. So the question I'm asking is, if I give this topology, if I did not have this topology, and your friend comes and says, here is a joint distribution, believe me, even if you don't trust her, you just have to take her word for granted. What are you going to do? Okay. Now that you have this, and she again gives you a new joint distribution, you should at least have some way of calling her bluff. And the way you can call her bluff, essentially, is to check whether or not every conditional independence assertion that is entailed by this network is satisfied by her distribution. If it is not, then she must have made this up. You agree? Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's a subtle concept. You know, it's still infinite number of joint distributions, but there are really infinitely fewer joint distributions that are consistent with this topology. Okay, there are many, many distributions that won't be consistent, and so that's why I ask this question very carefully. All I want to say is, you can never be sure that your friend is telling the truth, but you can be sure that she is not telling the truth in some cases. That's good, right? So that's what this constraint is. That's the topology is telling you that constraint. And how do you check whether conditional independence assumption holds in a joint distribution? To see whether or not, I basically want to say probability of Mary calls given John calls alarm, burglary, earthquake is the same as probability of Mary calls given alarm. That's what is true in my network, right? But if my friend gave me a huge big joint distribution, using that I can compute the unique value of this I can compute the unique value of this. If they are equal, then the independence holds. If they are not, it doesn't hold. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay? Notice that all I'm saying is the independence that is enforced by the network is present in what my friend gave me. Okay? Now, one of the other questions, let's see, is, so the main point to understand is that the network topology does put restrictions on the join distribution. You know, even though there's still infinite number of distributions, some others are not possible anymore. The second question is continuing that trend in the question above. Suppose the second friend comes along and says that he can give you the conditional probabilities that you want to complete the specification. So basically, you are ready with this topology. You know what are the numbers you need. They will put numbers into this. Okay? Can they put numbers into this in such a way that the joint distribution would be somehow bad, inconsistent? That's the question. One important issue in probabilistic reasoning is if you start asking a set of numbers from people, they can give numbers that can become inconsistent with each other. So you should stop asking questions before the inconsistency can arise. There is a classic example of, what happens if you consider ignorance to be 0.5 probability. You know, the Gardner has this. How many of you know this? So if you ask somebody, what's the probability that there's going to be, a certain type of life form in certain particular galaxy? And, I don't know, maybe low, maybe 0.1. Then I say, what's the probability that a particular element exists on this crazy galaxy, which you never heard of? Okay, just, I don't know, 0.5. And then one more. I mean, actually, you ask a bunch of these elements. Okay, everything, instead of saying I don't know, I'll say 0.5. You know, missing the difference between I don't know and saying 0.5. Okay. Now, in that case, what you can do is you can show that the probability that it actually the Earth can, that life can exist is much higher than what you thought what you originally said. Because multiple I don't knows, and if you actually take the negations of them, and the probability that all of them together are not present winds up being much smaller. So that something is present is going to be much higher, 1 minus that. And that causes an inconsistency with respect to what you said. Okay? So the problem is you should not ask too many questions to people because they can get you into inconsistent numbers. This is a problem. Okay, yes. No. So the question ultimately is, see, the point is that, no, it's not possible. I'll actually send you the Gardner thing. It's a very cute example. In general, if you ask, the problem in the probabilistic reasoning is you can ask what's the probability that burglary causes alarm, and they'll tell you something. And what's the probability that if alarm occurred, what's the burglary happening? And they'll tell you some other number, and they can be inconsistent. Okay? My question is not a funny question. My question is, could you ever get into a situation where somebody filling these tables could get you a sort of an inconsistent probability distribution? Inconsistent doesn't mean incorrect. Who knows whether it's correct or not? You know, people can be bluffing you. Maybe you did wrong assessment of these probabilities and you got all wrong numbers. All I want is not to have inconsistency in my reasoning. Okay? And the beautiful point is, whatever you put in these tables, I have made sure that whatever you put in these tables, there is no way you can be inconsistent.
Is it possible
to be correct and inconsistent? Yes. No, it's not, no. It's not possible to be correct and inconsistent. It is possible to be consistent and incorrect because somebody gave you the wrong information. Okay, this is a important idea. All you can do as human beings when you have evolving knowledge about the world you live in is to take your current beliefs seriously and see if there is an inconsistency. Whenever there is an inconsistency, you need to change your belief. Okay, it could well be that all your belief system, the entire belief system is crude. Okay, I mean as a civilization we went through all sorts of scenarios where we would put everybody in jail if they didn't say that the planets are evolving around Earth. Okay? And we had all sorts of crazy belief systems. The only thing you can do is check whether there is inconsistency, circularity in your own belief system. That is the time when you get out. Okay? So it is important to know that. So in this particular case, you cannot give numbers here that can ever lead to inconsistency. That's a very useful thing. So you're not asking questions that can lead to inconsistent numbers. Yes?
If I fill 1 for all of these values, will it still be valid?
What?
If I fill 1 for all of the values over here, so I have the probability of boundary occurring is 1, the probability of earthquake is 1.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? No. Remember that this is the problem. Burglary, earthquake, alarm, John calls, Mary calls. Change these into G11, G12, G13, G14, G15. They don't have any meaning beyond. For you, they have meaning. This is the problem that you have to understand. When I use English words, you tend to think that I already know what those words mean. That's because you are imposing your semantics of the English word burglary and earthquake onto the network. This is a classic problem in AI. In fact, so much of a classic problem that I will give you another paper. Drew McDermott once wrote a paper called Artificial Intelligence Meets Natural Stupidity. And basically what he said was, people should never write programs whose top of the program itself will be, you know, instead of saying main like this, they would start writing understand. And then you look at this, must be understanding, you know, I mean, I wrote understand. It's like, you know, if anything put in LaTeX looks like a real paper, right? So what Drew McDermott said is, stop calling it understand, call it G1574, a procedure 1574, and see its behavior. Because the problem is, if you write the words that mean things to you, you would start deluding yourself, whether and what you know is different from what your program knows. I know that Jim Colafellow is going to turn in his grave. You know, thankfully he's not in the grave, but generally software engineers will turn in the grave if I tell them that you should write programs with procedure names that have no meaning to humans. But ultimately that's what happens in the assembly language. Meaning doesn't come from English. Meaning comes from interrelations between the entities in the program. Okay? So it's a very good question. Ask yourself, if I put all ones, does that cause a problem? It does not reflect your understanding of how Los Angeles works. But that's not inconsistency. Okay? Okay. The other thing that I wanted to actually point out in this previous one is personal probabilities. And that's actually connected to your question too. Okay? So nothing in the Bayes network tells me, I mean, so in terms of this reasoning about probabilities, it's not, I'm not actually putting any constraint as to how the numbers in this network should be filled, okay? Probability, so I wrote earthquake, burglary, earthquake, alarm, John calls, Mary calls. And there are numbers you're giving here. You could have computed these numbers actually by doing large amount of experimentation, or you could have just said, I feel like Los Angeles is a safe place. Burglary occurring, zero probability. But it seems to be moving too much. Earthquake occurring, one probability. You can say that. There's nothing wrong in you saying that. It will be a consistent probability distribution. Bayesians, this is the reason actually Bayesian reasoning is called Bayesian reasoning. Bayesians don't require that the probabilities be unique across everybody. They can be personal probabilities. So there can be optimists in Los Angeles who think there are no burglaries anywhere. And so they think burglary probability is very low. And there could be pessimists in every place, including Los Angeles, where they think burglary probability is extremely high. And they can put that higher number. The only thing that we care about is you should act in consistency with your beliefs. If you believe that burglaries don't occur much, then you shouldn't be wasting too much money setting up alarms in your room, in your home. Because then there is an inconsistency in your belief system. Similarly, if you believe burglaries are going to occur a lot of time, then you shouldn't be putting your valuables on your lawn. Okay, so this is a bigger point about whether or not there is an objective reality for these probabilities. They don't have to be. Okay. Okay. The last one is something that I started last time, which is it actually the case that for any given set of conditional independence assertions that I want to model, there is exactly a Bayes network that actually captures those and nothing more and nothing less. And I already mentioned last time that, you know, that's not true. But I want to give you a more deeper answer today. Think of the following issue. Given a graphical model G and a distribution D, okay, the distribution D is the real world. That's what you're trying to model. The graphical model is trying to model the independences in the distribution D. Okay, so there is a set of independence assertions that actually the G models. There is a set that D requires, that it enforces rather. Okay, now if those two sets are equal, you are happy. That means this is exactly, perfectly modeling D. Okay, but sometimes they won't be equal. So just as in logic we talked about soundness and completeness, you can talk about these two notions. G is what's called an IMAP of D. I didn't make up the name. It's called IMAP of D, which is sort of like soundness requirement. If in fact every conditional independence assertion reflected in G actually holds in D. That means you are not assuming more independences than are true in the real distribution. And G is called a DMAP of D if every conditional independence assertion of D is reflected in G. It's the opposite. And if both are holding, then it's called a perfect map. Okay? Now, before we go off, let's see the following thing. Suppose you don't know much about the world. Right, you know, a world of five variables, and you say, I'll assume they're all completely independent. That means A, B, C, D, E, you know, they're disconnected completely. Clearly, this has every possible conditional independence assertion holds in this, right, because everything is independent of everything else. Okay, so vacuously, such a distribution would be a DMAP. Such a graph would be a DMAP of every distribution. Because everything that can potentially, every conditional independence that can potentially hold in D is reflected in G. On the other hand, there are many that graph reflects that are not actually true in the world. Do we do this? How many of you have done naive Bayes classifiers or naive Bayes models of the world? Those of you who heard about this, essentially you are thinking the world is more independent than what it is. Okay? So essentially, you may lose soundness in that case. You will have completeness, you lost soundness, and pretty much the only reason you make more independence assumptions than they really are in the world is to make your life simple. Not to make your answers correct, but to make your life simple. Okay? What's weird, of course, is sometimes what we wind up doing to make our life simple seems to work anyway, even though they're actually wrong. Okay, so that's why naive Bayes classifiers are interesting. We'll talk about it later, that many a time it actually winds up working, even though it's not a perfect map. Okay, so you know exactly what, you know, what happens if you lose IMAPness and what happens if you lose DMAPness. Just as in the logic I talked to you about, if you were to give up on either soundness or completeness, which would you rather give up? You could ask that question here too. If you have to give up either IMAPness or DMAPness, which would you rather give up? And a separate question is, given a distribution D, is there a Bayes network that is a perfect map of it? Okay, and the answer is no, because here is a distribution. So if I have a distribution which has something like X and Y must be independent of each other given Z and W, and Z and W must be independent of each other given X and Y, you cannot write a Bayes network that only captures those independences and nothing more. You can either write more or less, but you can't write something that will be exactly those. right? Because, for example, I can write a Bayes network which is going to be an easy D-map of it, where X, Y, Z, and W are completely disconnected. In which case, all independences hold, so vacuously these also hold. But unfortunately, many more than are actually present here hold. Okay, so this cannot be actually handled in Bayes networks, and so there is another framework for graphical models called Markov networks, which can handle it, and we won't go into it. Okay, and then similarly, it turns out that the Markov networks are not able to handle something else. So, for example, if I have a distribution where X and Y should be independent of each other when you don't give Z, but the moment you give Z, they should be dependent on each other. This only Bayes networks can model. Markov networks cannot. This is so important, a crazy thing in Bayes networks. Remember, all the problem in the DCF came because of this. This is the common effect. X and Y lead to Z. Common effect leads to explaining away. Okay. So much so that there is a name for it. It's called the V structure. Okay. That cannot be. If your distribution has those conditional independence assertions, there is no equivalent Markov network. So if you look at the entire universe of all distributions, there is some set of distributions that can be perfectly mapped onto Bayes networks, some set that can be perfectly mapped onto Markov networks. There is a set of distributions that can be mapped onto either perfectly, and there are also distributions that can't be mapped onto any of them. Okay. Having said that, this is a nice picture to look at, but I also told you that once you have soundness and completeness, you routinely either keep one and give up the other or vice versa. You know, it's knowing what you are giving up is the only point of science. Okay, so it's like admissibility. You first understand admissibility and then give it up. Okay, you will notice that most practical systems don't actually use admissible heuristics. Okay, sound and complete reasoning. You first understand what sound and complete reasoning is and give it up. Okay, modest ponens, easy to do. It's sound but not complete. There are other kinds of things that you might wind up doing which are complete but not sound, but they'll wind up being useful anyway. And similarly here, IMAPness and DMAPness, you know which one to use when. If accuracy is paramount, should you give up IMAP or DMAP? Accuracy of the numbers that you compute on the probabilities.
No. DMAP you should give up.
If you can give up DMAP without any problem, if accuracy is paramount. Because if you assume that the world has more dependencies than it actually does, you can't go wrong. You'd be paranoid. You would get run over by a truck because you think everything is connected to everything. Let's not do anything. But on the other hand, you can't be wrong. Okay? If on the other hand, efficiency is important, not accuracy, efficiency is important, which would you rather give up? You would give up IMAPness. That's what naive Bayes classifiers do. Yes, there was a question.
Would it be possible to have directed and undirected?
Yes, they're called chain graphs. Unfortunately, they don't have any more expressive power than Bayes networks and Markov networks. Okay? The weird thing about this is Bayes networks and Markov networks, they're all, from a statistical, probabilistic point of view, you think of them completely from the point of view of the distributions for which they can be perfect maps. There is no notion of causality here. But Bayes networks have the nice property that you can superimpose a notion of causality on top of them. And then if you write them in the causal direction, then as I argued last time, causal probabilities are likely to be more stable. So if you compute if you assess the causal probabilities, you are likely to be more stable. Okay, so you almost took somebody's baby and used it for a different reason. You know, that's what we are doing. We're taking Bayes networks and imposing notion of causality. You know, all the directionality in probabilistic reasoning doesn't have to be about causality. And I'll push this point home in my next couple of slides as to how you might wind up generating a Bayes network when you don't know the causality in the domain. That's a very hard question. What makes your life simple in things like alarm, earthquake, example, is you know how the world works. And what you know is very easy to write down. Okay? But there may be worlds where you don't know how the causality works, in which case it's extremely easy to get it wrong. I mean, as I said, human civilizations are full of making wrong causal connections. Saying X causes B, X causes Y, when in fact maybe it's like, it's not X causing Y, X is actually not, you know, in the causal direction, it's in the diagnostic direction. For R, furthermore, neither X causes Y nor Y causes X, W causes X and Y together. So all you can actually observe in the world is correlation. Causation is additional step on top of it. In the world that we know, causation is known to us. And what we know, we take for granted. And you would realize how hard it is when I give you a bunch of data without any causal model. Okay? Okay. Yes, sir. No, it can be inferred. There are ways of doing it. But it's hard. In fact, so that's, let me just, I'll go back to it again. Okay, this one. It looks as if the way we looked at Bayes networks till now, it looks as if the hard part is the numbers, assessing the numbers. And topology is up for, you know, it's available for asking. That's only true for domains where the writer of the network knows more about the domain. That was true of Los Angeles. At least we act as if we know what causes what in Los Angeles. Okay? But in domains where all you have is data, then you first have to figure out the topological model, then you have to figure out the number. And in fact, that's much harder. And the topological model really can be thought of as a logical theory of causation in that world. And then you are looking at, and then, so in some sense, that's the much harder part. Having figured that out, figuring out, if somebody tells you the causation, qualitative causation direction, then figuring out the strengths of causation is much easier. So the reason we talk about learning of the numbers, in the context of assessing the numbers in the context of Bayes networks, is that's the easy part, not because it's the hard part. It's the easy part compared to actually coming up with the topology. It's easy for topology if you are in a human computer cycle where humans are writing the topology and the algorithms are just, the programs are just assessing the probabilities. Okay? So I keep saying that humans will write the topologies, right? So the question, of course, is that really easy for them? Sometimes it's not all that easy for them either. Okay? So the only thing this next set of slides basically says is there, for every domain there will be a so-called expert. Okay, they may not actually be real expert, but at least they're better than you, the programmer. So you go and ask them, so what do you think is the causal theory in this domain? And they will pronounce some pronouncement, and then you do what they say. At least if something goes wrong, they will get fired, not you. That's a good thing. Okay. So the question is, if I have a domain where I'm trying to model the underlying probability distribution as a Bayes network, I first have to figure out what are the variables, right? And then I have to figure out the topology. So suppose I figured out x1 to xn are the variables, and I'm trying to figure out the topology. So I can ask my expert, just tell me what's the causal theory, and they could give it to you. Or sometimes they say, I don't have time to do that, just ask me questions, I'll answer yes or no. Okay, then how would you do that? So the question is, one way of doing it is physically pick any order of variables and introduce the variables into the network one by one. You start with an empty network, introduce variables into the network one by one. Okay, and as the new variables are being introduced, ask the expert, is this variable dependent on the previous variable? And they'll keep answering yes or no. Without actually telling you anything about causation, they could be dependent for correlation reasons. Okay? So for example, suppose I choose the ordering M, if I don't know, this looks very silly for this domain because all of you know how Los Angeles works, at least you think how Los Angeles works. But if you don't know anything about these variables, you could have entered them in any particular order. Suppose you entered them this MJABE, there's a Los Angeles expert. Who you would then ask them. So I put Mary calls, then when Mary calls, there is nobody else, so there is no link question. There is no question of link. Then I put in John calls, and I ask my expert, is the probability of John calling given Mary calling the same as probability of just John calling without knowing anything? Okay, without knowing anything. And if he says yes, then you don't have to put a link. If he says no, you have to put a link. Okay, now if I don't know anything else, I know Mary called, is the probability of John calling more or less than not knowing anything? It's more, because normally in this domain, you know that when Mary calls, John also tends to call, because they would have called for the same reason. So he would have said, this is not true, if he's a real Los Angeles expert, in which case you would put this link. Okay? Then I introduce alarm, and then I ask a bunch of questions. So basically, is alarm given John and Mary calling the same as alarm? You know, or a bunch of questions such as, is alarm given John and Mary calling the same as alarm given Mary calling? If that's the case, then at least it's independent of one of the variables. Anyway, it turns out that this is also not true, so that it says no, and so you wind up putting links. Anytime the independence doesn't hold, you have to put a link. Remember, the missing links are independences. Then I put in burglary, then I ask again the question, and it turns out that the burglary does depend upon alarm, and then earthquake does depend upon alarm. So I have those. So that's my model now.
Here, why don't you ask questions like burglary and Mary call something?
You can ask. All I'm saying is, you know, I didn't ask all the questions exactly that I said. Basically, as I'm introducing new variables, I have to ask, given evidence on any subset of the existing variables, is that enough or not? Okay? So in this particular case, what's interesting, of course, is that when you introduce earthquake, you are likely to get the answer that earthquake occurring depends both on alarm and burglary. Because if you know burglary occurred, and alarm is going up, then earthquake is less likely. Remember the competing hypothesis. Now notice that the causal theory of this domain is, you know the causal theory of the domain. It's the burglaries and earthquakes that cause alarm to go off, which then cause John and Mary to call. But here is a Bayes network which is directional, but its direction has no connection to causality. This is my point. You know, if you wind up asking them in the causal direction, then you can actually, in some sense, superpose causality on top of the Bayes network, which already has direction. But this is fine Bayes network. And if you don't know anything about your domain, and if you ask questions in the wrong order, your expert will probably do this. And if you're just learning Bayes network topology from data, you could get something like this, with very, you know, very easily. Learning how world works is not easy. This is why we don't let our children onto the streets and say, just figure out. Okay, we tell them a lot. In fact, we tell them for 20, 25 years of stuff before we allow them to go out. Right? And some of the grad students don't even go out then. Okay, so this is a Bayes network for this. This is a Bayes network for this. And this too is a Bayes network for this. If I put things in the wrong order, if I put Mary calls first, John calls, then earthquake, then burglary, and then alarm, I'll get these links. Okay? Okay? All of them are Bayes networks for this distribution. Okay? The point is, this one essentially realizes it happens to be in the causal direction, and so there are two very important reasons to write the Bayes network in the causal direction. One, if you write it in the causal direction, you wind up having fewer links. Point one. So there are fewer CPTs that are needed. And point two, which is equally important, causal probabilities are more stable. That's the argument I had last time. Okay? So what you took for granted was a big blessing. The stuff that somebody figured out after a long, hard life in Los Angeles came free to you. And then the stuff that they don't want to remember, which is the exact strengths of various causations, you picked up by assessing. Okay? And so in the worst case, how many probabilities can a Bayes network need? 31. Because there are 5 variables, 31 independent probabilities, this one actually needs all 31. Because you wrote it in the wrong order. And this could be you, if I didn't tell you names like Mary calls, John calls, earthquake, burglary, alarm. And if I told you X1, X2, X3, X4, X5, and you ask me questions, I tell you whether they're connected or not.
Could you make a set of big networks and then have the questions of one be answered by others to try to see?
No, but the question is, which is right? Ultimately, you need a ground truth. You know, I mean, what's interesting is, logically, there is nothing wrong in the second lock opening when you, I mean, second lock closing when you open the first lock, just so that the world would be consistent. There's nothing wrong. But causation doesn't go that way. Okay, I will send you yet another link to a beautiful lecture by Hoodya Pearl, the guy who actually originally came up with the idea of Bayes network. Now he spent most of his life talking about causality. And there's a very easy, accessible lecture that he gave several years back that I can send you a link to. And then you can read that to get an idea of distinction between causation versus just equation. Logical axioms are basically equations. There is no directionality. A implies B is the same as not B implies not A. But causation doesn't work that way. If you clamp the output, input doesn't change, right? Input affects output. If you clamp the output, input doesn't change normally. Okay.
Here, why is the earthquake in the first place? Why are these both linked? Why can't the earthquake? If you are including a variable, is alarm caused by medical?
No, you can ask causation questions. That's fine. You can ask them causation questions. So before you do this, you could ask them, is one thing causing the other thing? Causation questions, if your expert is going to answer causation questions, then you would never be in this mess. You would basically write this. But more likely than not, this whole thing is like a side argument saying causality matters. Okay? But if your expert also doesn't know, he's just a statistician. He or she is a statistician. All she or he has is correlation. And it's amazing. I mean, you know, we have no clue how our world works. I mean, you have to understand this. We have no clue how our world works. I mean, I can show, for example, that, you know, there are experiments that show that kids who grew up with large number of books in their home do well in the school. So is the books making them smarter or not? Well, maybe it looks like that. So everybody will buy up books and put them in their home so that their kid will become smarter. It's like, you know, clamping the output or the correlation variable so that something else will change. The only way you can change stuff is through causation. Okay, so for example, if you wind up having cancer, your child will have cancer. Kind of true, unfortunately. I mean, I don't want that you to have it. So one way of stopping your child from having cancer is to stop having cancer yourself. But that doesn't make any sense. Really, your cancer, the reason these two are correlated is because there is a genetic link which causes both your cancer and your child's cancer. And that took until what, 1900s, to figure that out. Before that, we would say everything is connected to cancer. So I did not pray to my favorite God five times a day, so I got cancer. So I will undo that. Okay. So my point is that we don't easily have causation information. All we have is statistical correlation. Yes.
Measure how uncomfortable it is in its
for the expert? Yeah, I mean, you can show the expert this and say, does it make any sense? Is it like reasonably causal? And then they'll say no, and that's fine. But let me do the following thing. How do real networks look like? They could look like this. They could look like this. This one is a car insurance network. You know, experts are people like you and me. It's just they act big. And, you know, you give them a big enough network, they'll say, yeah, whatever, you know, fine, who cares? You understand what I'm saying? So, in a five-variable network, it's reasonable. In this network, should this thing be there? Is something missing? Expert, tell me. All we have in terms of experts is they get fired instead of you. That's it. You know, that's good, because programmers should have their jobs. They get paid less to begin with. A couple of other interesting things about Bayes networks. I already said if you write it in the causal direction, you need fewer probabilities to write the network. The other ways of reducing the number of probabilities is basically introducing hidden variables into the network structure. Okay, so for example, I have a situation where I have n variables that all affect m variables below. Okay, then a Bayes network essentially would look like this. But suppose I understand this domain and I realize the way these n variables are affecting these m variables is essentially through their average or sum. Then I introduce a new variable called average or sum, which is not observable. These are variables are observable, these are observable, this is not observable at all. It's a hidden variable. I introduce this hidden variable because it makes the connections much simpler. Suddenly now everybody here affects these, and everybody here affects this, and this independently affects each of them. And the number of probabilities you need here is what? 2 power n here, 2 power n here, 2 power n here, 2 power n here. So m times 2 power n. And in this case, 2 power n here plus 2m. Much bigger, much fewer probabilities are needed. Okay? Again, how do you figure out these hidden variables? If you know the way the world works, you introduce variables that are not observable, that still have an important aspect in causal theory. Okay? Now, have you ever seen hidden variables? Of course you did. Okay? So for example, here is a car mechanism, car diagnosis scenario, and even people like me can understand this. I don't particularly understand how cars work, but you know, so look, lights, oil light, gas gauge, car won't start, dipstick, and these are all symptoms that you can directly observe. And these are all diseases for the car that, you know, they can charge you money to repair. Okay? Obviously, you would like to think that the diseases are connected to symptoms. Yes, they are. But you introduce syndromes in between. I'm using medical terminology. Okay? So there is an idea called no charging, which is connected to an idea called battery being flat, which then winds up affecting a bunch of variables here. These two are hidden variables. There is no charging light. There is no charging observable. It's not a disease. It's a higher level syndrome. Okay? In medicine too, you have diseases, you have syndromes, and you have symptoms. And you talk about syndromes because it reduces, it compactly states your causal theory. Okay? This is another way you can reduce the number of probabilities you need to assess. But it doesn't come free. Somebody has to tell you these are good ones, or you should be smart enough. Okay? Remember that numbers are easy. I mean, we do numbers not because they're hard, but because that are things that we can actually assess. You know, the harder one is the causal theory, that you got it free, most domains. Okay, another idea for reducing the specification, making the network specification more compact is obviously, as I said, use parameterized distributions for conditional probability tables. Okay, remember I mentioned this several classes back, how do you specify the distribution of a continuous variable? For a continuous variable, if you have one single continuous variable, you need infinite number of probabilities to specify its distribution, right? Okay. However, we get by having a template, let's say a normal distribution, which then has only two parameters that need to be specified. Because you have the most important thing, which is the shape, you have specified using, you know, the analytical distribution, and all you need is the two parameters. Now, when you fit a distribution to one of these templated distributions, what you're doing is you're taking liberties with the world. You know, right? That's not necessarily the way the world is working, but you're just saying it will be easier for me to represent it that way. So the classic case, a normal distribution is actually a classic case. In fact, you have to do it for continuous variables, because there's no other way of representing distributions of continuous variables other than by using templates. Because how will you represent infinite number of probabilities? Okay, for discrete variables, it looks like you have a choice, because it's only, you know, 2 power n number of numbers, if n is the number of Boolean variables, right? But even there, you at some point of time, you have too many numbers. Okay, so another trick that you can use which is sort of obviously, you know, following from the normal distribution kind of trick, is templated distribution. And a templated distribution for a Boolean set of variables could be something like a noisy R. So if x1 to xn is causing y, the causation can be a noisy R. That means if any of them are present, it will become true. And even if none of them are present, it may still become true. Okay? So it's basically what you're talking about is the strength of the causation. Okay? It's the distribution then would be a noisy R where all I wind up doing is I will require the probabilities only of a particular cause not causing the symptom. Okay, so in this particular case, I'm talking about fever is the symptom. It can be caused by cold, flu, and malaria. Okay. And I will assume that it's a noisy R distribution. That means any of them can cause fever. Any of them alone can cause fever, okay, with certain probability. It's noisy. If it is logical R, then any of them will cause fever with full probability. If it's noisy R, they cause fever with certain probability, which is close to 1. And so what's interesting, of course, is when do they not cause fever? That's 1 minus of that number by themselves. And I will make the assumption that the failure probabilities, that their failure of a disease not causing symptom is independent of another disease not also causing the symptom. I make that independence assumption. Once I assume that, then all the numbers in this table can be computed with just 3 numbers. Okay, so the 3 numbers I need in this case are the probability that malaria does not cause fever, which is 0.1. Probability that the flu does not cause fever, which is 0.2. Probability that cold doesn't cause fever, which is 0.6. These are the only 3 numbers I ask from you. Okay, and then I'll compute all the other numbers for you like this. How do I compute the other numbers? The probability of malaria and flu, so this one, for example, where is this? So this one, here flu is true, malaria is true, and still fever is not caused. That means both of them should fail to cause fever. I would assume the failures there are independent. So the combined probability that they would both together not cause fever is this times this, 0.02. That means that they will cause fever is 1 minus this, it's 0.98. Okay? And the same way I do this for everybody. Okay, so here I essentially use, and you can generalize this same sort of a thing for things like noisy AND distributions, just like noisy R, which are basically again templated distributions that reduce the number of assessments that you have to do. And then the last thing I want to say, which is a summary for making the Bayes networks. So I think we said enough about how you can impose causality on the structure of the network if you write it in the right direction. And it's generally easy for experts to construct, and you can use canonical distributions to make the numbers even more compact, fewer numbers to be found. If you write it in the causal direction, you wind up needing fewer numbers, and also they'll be stable. And then if you introduce hidden variables, then you can reduce the number of numbers you need to assess. Okay? And then here is a kind of the last thing I want to show today, which is just an actual system that was built for a medical domain called Pathfinder system. It's one of the long chain of expert systems. Okay, medicine is actually one of the places where Bayesian reasoning first took hold. Okay, so they would try, Pathfinder actually went through, you can say, 1, 2, 3, and 4 variations. The first variation, it was just a simple rule-based system with logical reasoning. So you would say this disease causes this symptom, this other disease causes this other symptom, and so on. Then they tried a variety of approaches for uncertainty, including certainty factors and fuzzy logic and all that stuff. And then by 3, they started doing simple Bayes reasoning of the type that I showed you before I came into Bayes network. And 4, they then did Bayes network based reasoning. Okay, and I'm showing this because in fact 4 does way better than all the others. in terms of accuracy. And what's more interesting, Pathfinder 4 is better than the human expert, the expert doctor who designed it. That's good. So we don't need doctors anymore. I mean, they just make our systems and then we can use the system. The only problem, of course, is Pathfinder 4 can then be, in fact, there was a classic example where somebody took Mycin, which is one of the first systems, which is even before Pathfinder, and they described to Mycin was an internal medicine system. So you tell them the symptoms that you are suffering from, and they'll try to explain to you what disease you might be having so that they can do operation on you. And so this guy went to Mycin and explained to it all the problems with his car. Okay, he just seriously explained the problems with his car, and then the system then basically said the liver of the car should be removed. Okay, and it was a liver transplant is being done right now. So the problem, of course, is it's a very circumscribed application where if you describe the symptoms, then it can do a diagnosis better than human doctors. And this is not surprising. Fourth or fifth or sixth reading that I said I will send today's class, and the next one, the seventh reading I can also send you, is a beautiful essay by a doctor, medical doctor called Atul Gawande, who comes on network TV all the time, who basically wrote a New Yorker piece saying it's not surprising that Bayes networks do better than us. I'm not Bayes networks, but automated diagnostic systems do better than doctors. It shouldn't be surprising to us. And he basically argues that, you know, people do well by specialization. So for example, general surgeons are out. There is a LASIK surgery which only does one type of surgery, 15,000 of them every day, and they do well in that. And so he argues that that's the same thing that's happening here. But doctors have come to terms with this. Okay. So we'll stop here. Next class, we will talk about inference with Bayes networks. And please read the material before coming to the class.